welcome to episode 246 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on September 3rd, 2021. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss the topic or recent news and how it relates to you. This week is all about Azure AD and squirrels? Okay, so we talk a little about Visual Studio Code and Code Spaces as well, and also discuss Windows Server 2022 and Windows 11. Enjoy the discussion. I have technology issues today.
All sorts of technology issues.
But guess what issues I don't have?
Issues signing into your AD tenant.
No, I do not have that. I also do not have squirrel issues.
Yeah, we can talk about it. Like, I was sitting here...
About the squirrel issue?
Yeah.
Squirrel?
Home office, right? We all work from home these days. So my house backs up to a plot of land that's a nature preserve. So there's no build out. There's nothing back there. But like, we're in Florida, right? It's all the big swamp. So I'm not allowed to trim some of the trees back or do other things. And some of them come kind of close to the house. So we get just random stuff that comes up on the roof. Like, it's not uncommon to have lots of squirrels or things like skittering across because I can't cut the trees back and keep them away from the house, nor would I want to. Like, the preserve's a nice thing. So sometimes you hear them running and skittering around. So it heard the skittering and went like, oh yeah, not a problem. That's just a squirrel. And so I let the dogs outside. Normally you let the dogs out back or out front, like wherever they happen to be, and it'll scare them away. They'll jump off and they'll be gone. Let the dogs out. There's nothing on the roof. Like, normally you see them running away, jumping back to the trees, whatever. I'm like, huh, that's weird. So I come back inside and I just continue to hear the skitter, skitter, skitter of a squirrel going around. I'm like, and I keep going outside, looking up the roof, like, there's nothing there. And then it just kind of stopped. And this is all during the day. And so it stopped for a couple minutes. And I went to another part of the house. I was eating lunch over in the kitchen. And I'm hearing skittering in the kitchen above my head. And now I'm like on the opposite side of the house. I'm like, is the guy just like following me around, like up on the roof? Like, what's going on? And I'm like, you know, he probably got in and he's in the crawl space. So I started, I go out in the garage and pop open the ladder to the crawl space and I crawl up there. And if you've ever seen Christmas Vacation where the squirrel is just like in the tree and it's prone and it's ready to jump out, as soon as I turned the light on in the crawl space and I turned my head to the right, there was the squirrel just like looking at me. Like, oh, you rotten thing. And of course, it took off and skittered away. So today is my day to have somebody come out and take a look in my crawl space and my attic there and say like, hey, like, was there any damage done? Do we need to clean anything up? Because squirrels are rodents. They like to chew on wires and eat things. So we'll figure all that out. I'll probably need to spend some money to do some extra flashing, close up the soffits, things like that. And then I've got... yeah, we'll see how it all goes. I don't think the squirrel's up there anymore. I opened the garage and I left the crawl space door open with like the ladder down. And I just left it like that for a couple hours. And I didn't hear him like the last 2 days. And it's taken a couple days to get somebody out here to take a look. So I'm interested to hear what the man who is currently crawling around my crawl space right now comes back and says. So if I have to pause for a few minutes, like if we have one of those natural pauses in here, it's because I had to get out and go talk to the squirrel man, like the wildlife pest management folks, and see what I need to do to fix my house along the way.
So do you hear him skittering around above your head now?
No, I haven't heard him in a couple of days. Like I said, I left the garage open.
Oh, no, not the squirrel, the man.
You
have a squirrel man skittering above you?
He's over in the other part of the house, or if anything, he'll just be stomping around on the roof. We'll see how good the noise isolation is on my microphone. Okay.
Hopefully he doesn't like come through the ceiling into your office.
You know, it would just be one more thing to fix in this fun pandemic time that we're all in.
Yes, it would be. Sorry. I was looking at my phone because I have a flurry of text messages. Oh my word. I have a flurry of text messages going on because we're still in the middle of enclosing our porch. So my wife is out looking for backsplashes and trying to match it with countertops and floors and what color we might want to paint our cabinets and all of that. So I have other projects going in. It's just the season for projects.
Yeah, I got all that stuff too. I had to apologize to the man who came to look at my house. Like, we bought a bunch of cabinets for built-ins. Those are all sitting in pallets in the garage because I can't find any carpenters to come in and finish like the custom parts that I need done. It is just a whole thing going on out there.
Got it. I have a guy who's doing my addition. He might come do it for you. I can ask him if he wants to go do some built-ins.
Yeah.
Or you can call him. I can give you his name and number.
No, you should just have him call me.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
So anywho, that's one thing going on.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business. So I have something else for you to try that came out today and I was talking with others about it. Go to a GitHub repo. And anybody that's listening, do the same thing. Go open up a repo on GitHub and hit period on your keyboard. It's a rather nifty experience. Are you doing it right now?
Of course I'm very focused. Doing it right now. I have to do, like, do you know how hard it is to record this thing with you? I have to multitask. I do all our show notes. Like, those have to go in real time. Oh, I'm not even signed into a GitHub repo right now.
Oh, you're not signed in.
So let me go. Well, so
I can tell you what the experience is.
Well, no, I'll just go to one of my repos. So let's go here. I have a personal repo that I maintain for Azure Storage best practices. So let's go in. So what do I do once I'm in here?
Once you're in a repo, just hit period on your keyboard. That's it. Nothing else. Just period.
No, there's more than that. I need to be signed in.
Oh, well, you do have to be signed into a repo. Like,
I'm not signed in. Oh, here we go.
Oh, sorry. Go to a repo and be signed into your repo.
Gonna have to do the MFA dance. Okay.
And then hit period once you're signed in.
Yep. Here I go into a quasi code space, not code space.
You go into a code space, Visual Studio code in the browser. Or at least you should.
Yeah, but it's not a proper code space. Like, have you played around with these at all yet? They're almost like on-the-fly code spaces. So then you...
I have not played around with these yet.
Yeah, so you can take this and turn it into a proper code space if you want to. But it's effectively like a limited amount of compute that's available to you to go ahead and play with.
And play with and run Visual Studio Code and go edit all of your repo code.
Yep. Indeed. So I think the other thing you can do is you can go to vscode.dev.
Yes. So this was one of those that I saw the blog post, and by the time I went to go read it, it had been deleted. But then I dug around on Twitter and found this vscode.dev URL.
Yeah. Interesting enough, like, one of the things it'll do when you go into GitHub and you hit period on a repo once you're signed in, like, it opens up that code spaces experience. Like, it'll walk you through onboarding, get started with VS Code, you know, what theme do you want to use?
Right. Set up your themes, your colors, your settings, all that.
All those things. Yep. So by default, it encourages you to sync your settings across as well. But then you do that in the one code space, and then you go over to vscode.dev, and then you have to do the whole dance again.
All over again.
Yep.
Yeah. See, and I did it the opposite order, where I went to vscode.dev first and set it all up. And then I went to the code spaces today and I was like, oh, I have to go set it all up again. So doesn't matter which order you do it in, you still have to do it twice.
Yeah. The cool thing is, once you're in this experience, like, it's nice to have the code browsing experience. And you do get things like extensions. So if developers have built their VS Code extensions with web support in mind, those will all work. So same thing, you sign in, sync your settings, which is all super cool. If you go to vscode.dev, you can do things like open remote repositories. So if you just know the URL to the repo you want to get, you just copy, paste it in, it'll actually open the whole repo up for you. So it's like, once you're in it, it's very navigable, discoverable. It's actually got quite a bit going on.
It does. And the nice thing with like the vscode.dev too is that if you go to open your repository and the account you're signed into has access, you can like open a repository from GitHub and just browse through all your GitHub repos that you have access to. So that's how I've gotten to a lot of mine, is I'll just go open a repo, go edit it. If I want to make any changes, I was talking to somebody else today, you can go check them in. If you have GitHub Actions tied to it, it'll trigger them. So it really is like a full Visual Studio Code in the browser experience.
Yeah, it's super, super nifty. I would recommend anybody check it out. So I'll put a link in the show notes, speaking of being the person who does the show notes.
The live show notes.
I'll put a link in there to Visual Studio Magazine had a really good write-up on this the other day. It's got links to not only like what the functionality is, but GitHub has authored a couple videos that they put out about the functionality on YouTube. There's some pretty big threads going on Reddit that just explain the flow of this whole thing and how it comes together. One of the big things for me is like, I'm always trying to remember that it's there, because I spend a lot of time in Git repos and on GitHub, just as we're publishing things and pushing them around. And I still, like, I'm, you know, what, 3-4 days into this, and I'm still forgetting about it every day.
Yeah, the nice thing for me too is this brings a lot of options, I would say, to other devices. Like, I sit on the couch a lot of times in the evenings with my iPad. And now having like the whole VS Code in the browser, I haven't tried it yet on the iPad, but I'm assuming for authoring content in these repos or making edits to it, this should work pretty well on something like an iPad, or if people use Chromebooks for this type of stuff. I have never tried that, nor will I ever. But it gives you a lot of flexibility there.
There's been some other announcements and things that folks might want to know about, whether they use Azure or Microsoft 365. Did you see the announcement? I think hopefully everybody's seen the announcement by now, that all of the kind of older versions of AD Connect are being retired. So they have things on the back end, like you have like that local SQL DB, and that uses SQL Server 2012 components. None of that stuff's really like in the best place these days. It's getting pretty old. So the official announcements are out now to go ahead and upgrade to a more modern version of Azure AD Connect, specifically before August 31st, 2022. After that date, those older versions are not going to be able to connect to your Azure AD and perform synchronization and do the things that you want them to do. So like, that's kind of big, but then you also get to pick up and kind of take on all the bug fixes, security fixes, things like that, that have been kicking around over the last couple of years as well. So if you haven't planned, like if you are on an old version and you haven't planned for that upgrade, like, hey, now is the time to go ahead and make that happen. You can totally do a swing migration. Like, you know, you still have the old one running, you get the new one all configured and set up. Like, go ahead and effectively cut over between the two of them. It's not too bad. If you want to move like custom configurations, you can get all that stuff from like exported, get it all imported into a staging server, upgrade the staging server to active, things like that. It's a pretty well-known path. And, you know, hopefully everybody, like if you are in this situation, you can kind of grok the articles that are out there about it. There's a pretty good one on docs.ms, which walks you through step by step, regardless of, you know, the migration path you want to take.
So that's the safe way to do it. Or you can be like me, because this is going from essentially the 1.x version to a 2.x X version. And I actually did this in my environment 2 or 3 days ago, and I just did it in place. I was like, go run the 2.0 installer, just go put it right on top of the 1.x version. And it was, there were a couple interesting things. So first of all, I'm running this on a Windows Server 2016 that sets up in Azure. Windows Server 2016 does not have TLS 1.2 enabled by default. So I had to go run, I did it running PowerShell because I didn't want to go dig through the Windows registry, but there's like maybe 10, 12 registry entries that you need to make if you're on Windows Server 2016 or essentially older. I don't know about 2019, but it does require that TLS 1.2 be enabled. So I had to do that. That was pretty painless. Just ran the registry keys, went in, did it again. Doing it in place, it actually failed like 5 different times on me with various errors about SQL Server not being running, about different things like that. So over the course of trying to do this, it was like, do a few retries, do a reboot, do a few more retries. And eventually it all started working again. But it was a little like just kind of doing it right over top of the 1.x to 2.x. There were some of those updates and some of those weird errors that I had to just kind of retry my way through.
Yeah, it gets a little sketchy there. And I think when you say you did it in your environment, I'm assuming you mean your company environment, which is IntelliJink, which isn't like, you know, it's not a 50,000 seat organization.
Right. It's
so,
like,
so complexity and configuration and other things are potentially a little bit lower where you can take on some of that risk and go ahead and do that. I would make the argument that most folks should probably do a little bit more planning as they go ahead and execute that, which would give you the opportunity to do things like potentially upgrade your Windows Server versions. Like we're talking about dates and things that came out, Windows Server 2022 GA'd recently. That's out there and kicking around if anybody wants to, you know, go ahead and play with that. And there's all sorts of, you know, neat fixes inside of Server 2022, things like network security, TLS, you know, you'd have access to, you know, like TLS 1.3. There's a bunch of storage things in Server 2022 around like SMB and the storage migration service, containers, like there's just a whole bunch of little things going on in there, which everybody might want to check out.
I haven't dug through all of the new features yet in Server 2022, but from the headlines, a little bit I've caught, it sounds like there are quite a few updates, improvements, new features, all of that. It sounds like it's a fairly significant upgrade from 2019 to 2022 in terms of the work they put into a lot of those features and services and stuff in the new version.
Yeah, it's not just kind of baseline security. It's better integrations with things like containers. So optimizations around container images for Windows Server, which has kind of been an ongoing thing, you know, container sizes particularly, and being able to pull them out of registries in a sane kind of way. There was a partnership that was announced with the Kubernetes community. So there's a couple of native Kubernetes services, like Azure native Kubernetes services. So Azure Kubernetes Service, AKS, or you've got AKS on HCI as well. So Azure Stack Hyper-Converged Infrastructure. So to make those things work better with kind of bare metal Windows Server, you know, there's partnerships there that are going to keep things moving forward. And then just like you said, a slew of fixes. I will try and new functionality. It's not just fixes. I'll try and put some links in the show notes to what's going on as far as file service updates, some of the distinct articles that were put about containers and things like that.
Yes, and I posted one. There's a bunch of new like failover clustering features coming to it. So I just threw a link out in Discord too about some of that coming. So a whole bunch there. So, Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they've learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud. Another GA is coming here shortly too. Windows 11 is supposed to GA, I think, on October 5. So we still have a little time, another month or so, but that's going to come up pretty quick as well.
Yeah, so there's a couple things going on in Windows land. So Windows 11 is going to GA October 5th. And some of the requirements around what types of CPUs you can run on, like the whole TPM 2.0 thing, has been backburnered in some cases. So there's some updates there for you. And then there's also a Surface event later on in the month.
Oh, that's right. I did see that. I saw rumors also about a Duo 2 coming at that event. I didn't know people still bought those.
I think Dan Patrick's the only one, but...
Well, I think he sold his. Shh, don't tell anybody. I don't think he has one anymore. But yes, that is... I've been playing with Windows 11 a little bit in some VMs. I'm curious to see how the upgrade goes from like the whole cloud PC, right? So I have the cloud PC with the whole Windows 365 thing. I'm assuming at some point in time that gets upgraded to Windows 11. What I'm kind of curious to see is, is that something Microsoft is going to push down and like do a slow roll of those images, or... am I going to get like a prompt and I can actually choose to upgrade that to Windows 11 myself? Because some of the other updates, like I'll get Defender updates pushing down and some other updates, and I can actually even go and roll the cloud PC and like insider builds. So I haven't actually gone through and done like the fast insider build yet because I don't really want to break my cloud PC. But that whole process is going to be kind of interesting. And how that ends up working out.
Yeah, I haven't seen any updates on plans for in-place upgrades and going like version to version within a cloud PC.
Yes, new things to keep our eye on over the next month as announcements start rolling out. And Ignite's getting closer. I saw a tweet the other day that Ignite is in 60 days. And I'm like, oh, I kind of forgot about that. This whole virtual conference thing, Scott, is wearing me out. Like, I used to be excited about Ignite. Like, I saw it in 60 days and I'm like, it's going to be a bunch of announcements, but this virtual thing just doesn't have the same excitement as it once did.
Yeah. I can't make you get excited about it, but you are correct.
It's a personal problem.
It's coming up. I know, you know, certainly internally, like, yeah, we're planning with it, kind of working with marketing, deciding on announcements and things that are coming out. So,
am I going to see you at Ignite, Scott? Are you going to be on the big screen for Ignite?
Probably not. I talk about how I work in Azure Storage, but not a ton about, you know, my role necessarily. So I'm a product manager in Azure Storage, but I'm not a feature product manager. So I don't own any specific feature within our stack. So for an event like Ignite, you could potentially run into me at maybe like an overview session of Azure Storage if somebody else in our org didn't want to do that. Like that would just be one of those low-hanging fruit things that rolls downhill and falls in my lap. But if it was a specific feature announcement, like let's pick something we released in the last couple months. You know, we came out with NFS a little bit ago. Imagine we had announced NFS at Ignite. The product owner for that, kind of the product manager for that, would usually be the one who's presenting those sessions, you know, in partnership with kind of our devs who worked on it as well, which is totally the right way to do it because they are the kind of subject matter experts.
Got it. That makes sense. There was something else I was going to say too that popped into my head, but it's long gone.
About Ignite or just squirrels, your renovation? Who knows with you at this point?
Squirrels from the effect that I saw a squirrel, but no, I don't remember. There was something you said that popped something into my head, but I can't even remember what it was about.
NFS, Windows Server, GA,
it's Friday
Ignite.
Afternoon. It's long gone.
It's going to be a virtual conference. You're going to have to attend. Sorry.
Yeah. I have absolutely no idea what I was going to make a comment about.
If you want another Azure AD thing, I think I can pick up some of the pieces here for you. So Azure AD Connect, we kind of talked about the deprecation of V1 and getting yourself over to V2. There's another retirement that is going to impact you within Azure AD. And that's the Azure AD Graph is retiring on June 30th, 2022. So that has some specific impacts as well. You're going to want to make sure that any apps that you have that use the Azure AD Graph, like if you've written a custom app, maybe you've written a PowerShell script that calls the Graph APIs in Azure AD directly, those all need to be updated. But this also impacts things like native tooling that's out there. So Azure AD commandlets for managing Azure AD and PowerShell, anything that was written against the Azure AD Graph, that's also going to stop working at the same time. So you need to kind of come up with a plan now if you want to continue to manage your Azure AD in the same ways that you do it today. And this has all sorts of downstream impacts. It's not just user management. It's the whole license management component, right? If you're still running commandlets that are doing like set MSOL license, then yep, you've got some planning to do. And you're going to have some work to go ahead and translate the existing scripts and processes over to something that does support the Microsoft Graph.
Yes, that is a big deal, something to think about. I did remember seeing that article. I don't believe I've read all of it yet. But I remembered what popped into my head, and it had nothing to do with Azure AD, so I don't know why prompted it. But I had to go take my first certification renewal today. I have one expiring on September 9. I was going to lose my Office 365 Administrator Expert.
Oh, this is a
certification.
Good one to close out on. So I am 60 days, I only have 60 days to renew my Azure certs. And I am like shaking in my boots because I haven't taken a test in so long. I don't know how it's going to be, how it's going to go, what it's going to look like. So let's close on this one. But like, take me through the recertification experience.
So I'm going to be careful because, to be fair, so the very first thing, I went in and it said, you have to renew. I'm like, yep, I'll go ahead and renew. I think they give you an approximate time of like, mine was like an approximate time of 45 minutes to go through the renewal process. And then it did give me all of the material. They're like, this is the material you should go review before the renewal process. And it was like 6 hours of content on Microsoft Learn. And this was at like 7:30 this morning. And I was like, yeah, no, I am not going through 6 hours of content to go through a renewal process on Microsoft Learn. But once I started the renewal process, they actually do make you agree to an NDA on the renewal, which is a little, like, it just struck me as a little odd because I'm sitting here in my living room with my computer on my lap going through the renewal process. And there's like, I mean, it's not like they lock your computer. It's not like if you take the tests at home where they just lock it and you have to, you're in, they make you show webcams and all of that. It was just like taking a test, only I was just sitting there at the kitchen table answering questions, multiple choice questions, a lot like you would get on a test.
Can I stop you for a second? So that experience, yeah. In the I'm taking a new exam world today, you have a moderator who's watching you, like we're all yep. doing these exams at home, or even when you went into Pearson, you know, you had somebody sitting that could always see you and understand what was going on and what you were doing. Are you like in that Pearson environment when you're taking it, or is it just like the regular like learn assessments? You know, if I go to
it's just like
random Microsoft Learn course, and you know, it has like the summative at the end of it.
I would say it's very similar to like the assessment from the Microsoft Learn perspective. It's not moderated, as far as I know. I wasn't moderated. I don't think there were any like your screens being recorded. There was no yeah. None of that. It was literally like I'm in a browser window taking one of the assessments on Microsoft Learn.
Gotcha. So it's not that online proctored exam kind of
no, not
world,
at all.
Which is like, I don't know. If anybody's ever taken one of those exams at home, they're super stressful because you're not allowed to have anything on your desk. You got to show your environment on camera. You're not allowed to have paper near you, and your dog walks into the frame or your kid walks behind you and your auto failed. And it's just like horrible and no good.
Spot by NetApp is the cloud automation platform that makes it easy to deliver continuously optimized infrastructure at the lowest possible cost. Spot helps their customers get the most out of their cloud investments by automating cloud infrastructure to ensure performance, reduced complexity, and optimized costs. Their machine learning and automation scale to exactly meet application needs using the most efficient mix of instances and pricing models, eliminating the risks of over-provisioning and cloud waste. Best of all, their software works with leading cloud platforms, services, and tools so that you can simplify and automate your cloud infrastructure wherever your workloads and applications run and however you run them. Discover how leading companies from cloud-native startups to global enterprises are automating, simplifying, and optimizing their cloud infrastructure with Spot by NetApp. Check them out at spot.io/MSIT, where you can find more information, request a demo, or even start a free trial. So I didn't even have to schedule a time. I sat down on the couch this morning before the kids were up, and I was like, oh shoot, I haven't taken my renewal yet. I know it's coming up at the beginning of September. We're 3 days in. I went and looked it up and said, yeah, let's just go ahead and renew it. And I just clicked right in, started doing it. And it only took me like 30 minutes to plow through the renewal. And they do have a certain percentage. So you do still have to get a certain percentage right in terms of in order to pass it and renew it. I passed mine. I don't know what happens if you don't pass it, if you can try again, or if they take your certification away.
My understanding is you can take them as many times as it...
Times as you need to.
As many times as you need to. Yep.
Got it. So, yeah. And someone asked in the Discord chat too, is it free? Yes, the renewal is free. If you go look at your dashboard, and I could probably find... I don't know if I still have that link... up because, oh, here it is. Oh, this is for me though. So I'll go put this in here and I'm going to take out my username because if you can go figure out what your username is, like mine was Ben Stedging. I don't know if it's always first name, last name, or what that name is. But that URL, docs.microsoft.com, for me, it's /ENUS/users/, and then it was my name, Ben Stedging /certifications. It shows me all my certifications and it shows me which ones are going to expire like within the next so many days. And then it tells me when I earned them and all of that. So I have one more in there, my Azure Administrator Associate one that expires the beginning of October or middle of October.
Oh, you and I are on the same timeline for that one.
So I just have a renew button right there.
That's my next upcoming one. I think it's like the AZ-104.
We must have taken those about the same time.
So I found a really good FAQ on Docs for this one. So it clarifies costing, like no cost. It also clarifies language, availability, things like that. And thankfully and helpfully, an answer to how many times can I retake the assessment? You can retake the assessment as many times as you need to take it to pass, but you must pass it before your certification expires. If you don't pass it the first time, you can immediately attempt the assessment again. But after the second try, you do have to wait 24 hours between attempts. So that feels pretty fair.
Got it. So I was looking through the NDA that I signed because I can get to here is, and here's a link to the NDA too about what you can and can't talk about. It's essentially keeping the questions, answers, content, everything on the exam, misrepresenting your identity so you can't have somebody else take it. You can't talk about what's on the exam, the policies, privacy, data transfer, ownership. Essentially, you're just agreeing to not reveal the questions and the content that was in the questions, it looks like. So mine was, I had 25 questions. It was just 25 multiple choice questions that I had to take. So that does not reveal anything about the contents of the questions.
I don't know if I have the brain power to answer 3 questions correctly, let alone 25. and I've been putting this off for a long time because you start getting your renewal notices at least 90 days out, because I got one at 90 and I just got my 60-day reminder, and it just stresses me out even thinking about it. Like, I just don't want to go through it.
So don't let you stress it out. So the Azure one is 45 minutes as well. It's online, it's free, and then they do give you prepare for the renewal assessment. So this is the first thing you get when you click on the renew, and then it gives you all the Microsoft Learn modules to go through to prepare for that certification. So yeah, sometime between now and October 17th, Scott, go click the button and just do it.
Just do it. Yeah, I guess I gotta keep my MCT or something. I don't know.
Or you can just let it expire. You probably got that one before you started at Microsoft, didn't you? For when you were doing more teaching.
I did. So I would like to keep up with the certifications. You know, back to that whole, I don't own any features in the storage. I am responsible for our learning material, like making sure that I'm representing the product group for how our training and material inside of the exams is presented within the mock materials, things like that. So I think it helps to have the perspective of what it's actually like to be somebody who has to go through and take those exams rather than sitting on the outside and saying, you know, I can just tell you what you're supposed to do or what you're supposed to learn about a specific thing without ever actually having gone through the experience.
Gone through it. That makes sense. So yes, I would say go through and do it. I actually have another exam coming up here, I think. I think I might be taking 304 next week or the week after. They just kind of pop up on my calendar. I'm like, oh, that's right. I should go do that, or I need to go do that. Oh, maybe it's longer. Maybe it's in October sometime. Oh no, there it is. 3 weeks. I'm going to go take AZ 304. We can see if I can get my Azure expert.
So you should do your 104 renewal right before the 304, because the 104 and the 304, from my perspective, are almost the same exam.
Yes, I probably will. In Discord, somebody asked if you put your badges in your signature. Personally, I do not. And this is not to come across as I have a bunch, because there's people that have way more badges than I do, but I have too many badges to make it, like, it would just make my signature look messy.
Yeah, I think it depends on what you want to get out of it. Like, in past lives, and I think you, like, this is still current life for you, you do training with customers. So I think it might be helpful to, you know, if you've got your MCT, to put like your MCT badge in your signature or things like that. I don't know about individual signatures though. Like, you know, I've got the AZ-104, the 203, or things like that.
Right. Well, and even like the other one. So I have my Power Platform Fundamentals. I have my MCT. I have my Enterprise Administrator Expert. I have my Teamwork Administrator Associate. I have my Azure Fundamentals. Or the Enterprise, that's the Microsoft 365. Microsoft 365 Enterprise Administrator Expert, Microsoft 365 Teamwork Administrator, Azure Fundamentals, MCT, Power Platform Fundamentals. So as I keep taking these, like, it just, that's why I don't tend to put them in there. And a lot of mine too, it's not, for me in the work I do, I don't know that it benefits it. Most of the time, by the time I'm emailing somebody and talking with somebody, they already know me well enough to know what I do. So the badges for me don't add anything to my signature. Other people, maybe they would. I would probably tend to put them more on like a website or a blog or something where people may stumble across me inadvertently or using a search engine want to know more about me than somebody I'm emailing. That's my two cents about badges and where you post them, place them.
Yeah, that's totally the way to go.
But I don't know how long we've been talking because of squirrels, but we should probably wrap up.
It feels like a while. We can wrap up.
It does. All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks, Scott. That was a good random, that was kind of a random Friday episode this week. My brain is shot.
Going into
maybe it's our long weekend.
We're going into a holiday weekend in the US. Yeah. So hopefully if you have the weekend off or you do get the holiday, you get the opportunity to take advantage of that. Even if you're not in the US, maybe you have other events coming up like Rosh Hashanah, things like that. Go ahead, take advantage, take some downtime, take it as you can get it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thanks, Scott. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your long weekend.
You too.
And we will talk to you next week.
Yep. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.